This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. There's been a lot of talk about vaccine passports as the numbers of fully vaccinated people have risen in many to most first world countries. And venues from restaurants to giant sports stadiums have started talking about requiring proof of being jabbed as a requirement of admission. But how is that done efficiently and securely? And how are fraudulent papers identified and rejected? One of the ways to process people quickly and accurately is using readers and scanners, handheld or as self-service kiosks. The idea is that you'd have a government-issued vaccine passport that has validated vaccine records, plus some sort of image database that confirms you are who you say you are. You walk up to a scanner, it does its thing, and you're in or you're rejected. The hardware side of this, for kiosk and touchscreen manufacturers, is probably not all that complicated, but the back-end software and database side is hugely complicated. I had a great discussion with Tony Anscombe, the chief security analyst for the tech firm ESET. We get into the opportunities and challenges facing any AV IT company looking at these passport kiosks as an emerging business. Tony, thank you for joining me. Can you tell me what ESET is all about and what also your role as chief security evangelist means?
So ESET is a long-standing cybersecurity company. We've been in the industry 30 plus years and we're headquartered in Europe. Many people will know us from years ago as an antivirus company, but today we're very much more than that. I mean, we have anti-malware products that you and I might use on mobiles or laptops or such like, but we also provide threat intelligence and endpoint detection and response systems all the way up through to big enterprises, so tens of thousands of seats where they're looking at anomalies in traffic patterns and such like. And that intelligence is super important in today's environment, especially when you've got so much ransomware attacking companies.
And as an evangelist, you're preaching to the choir, whether it's people who are CIOs of companies or people who don't know very much about network security, right?
Yes, a big part of staying safe online, whether you're an enterprise actually or whether you're a consumer, is human behavior, because we all have on occasion a tendency to look at a link and think it's safe, and you click on that link and hey, you're on a phishing page or you're downloading something that you don't want. Understanding what causes cybercrime and actually talking to people about how to avoid it and good behavior and the things to look out for is super important. So education is a large piece of cybersecurity. And it's important that people like me and most security companies have somebody like me are out there educating both enterprises and consumers.
Right. And I assume that for those other C-level executives like the CFO who may not know that much about it, it's important to have somebody that they can listen to that's not purely talking in acronyms and information that they can't possibly understand, but get enough of it to realize, okay, I can sign off on this.
Yes, it's important that we put it into real speak. So when you're talking to a CFO, what's going to be the impact to their business if they get a cyber attack? Because that's what they understand is loss of revenue, loss of business, loss of reputation, etc. So actually bring it back to what it might cause the business. And those are important points. No company wants to be attacked and have to make some data breach notification or anything like that.
I was looking forward to chatting because recently I came across information and actually republished a post from another publication about vaccine passport kiosks, which is something I hadn't really thought much about. I have not traveled yet. And I work at home, so I don't circulate a lot in buildings or anything else where this would be an issue. But if we shift to a world where vaccine passports are used a lot, I assume technology is going to have to be a big part of this because of the pure nature of throughput, that if you're going to process a lot of people and verify whether what they have is real or not, you're going to need machine help, because getting humans to do that is just going to create massive lineups and lots of mistakes.
Yes, and there will be a place for kiosks, but there'll also be a place for handheld scanners. And it's probably best to step back one and explain, because some of the people listening may not have a digital vaccine recognition. So it depends where you are and what your government is handing out, as in way of, yes, you've been vaccinated, and how that might actually be read. So in the US, I'm sure everybody has seen in some media stories the little paper CDC card. And of course, how would a kiosk actually validate that that's real? Because it's just a piece of paper. Whereas some governments have gone, where they've got centralized health databases, have gone to the other extreme of having, you know, QR codes and confirmation of the vaccination digitally. And if you haven't got a smartphone, you can print it out and carry it with you. But I think there's a wide range of different solutions. And it's not just the problem of you and I, Dave, going to maybe a concert, a theater, or an office where there's huge throughput through the door. It's also international travel. And does a kiosk recognize every different variant of confirmation of vaccination?
Yeah, and because every jurisdiction seems to be doing it a little bit differently, there's no standards and there's no kind of harmony around what it looks like, what you present, nothing, right?
Correct. And I'm actually going to use New York as an example, because I think New York have gone through the pain of kind of what I define as three solutions. They've gone through having the CDC card, then they've created an app where you can, in effect, upload the card. So, and it's not much more use than the card, other than it's a digital copy of the card. Mm-hmm. And then they've recently, in the last few weeks, adopted the Excelsior app, which is produced by IBM. And this works on blockchain, so the actual app itself provides some security about the data that it's holding, but it creates a QR code, and it tells you date of vaccination, the person's date of birth, and who they are. But of course, one thing that's missing from that is actually confirming who they are. So it's all very well having a vaccination record, but you also need to confirm the identity of the person that's holding the vaccination record. Because if you and I were together and one of us was vaccinated and one of us was not, yeah, I could easily install maybe my vaccination confirmation on your phone because I know you're going to a concert or such like. And if there's no validation of identification at the point where somebody checks the vaccination, then you're traveling, you'd be traveling unvaccinated on my vaccination record.
So what needs to happen? What would be kind of the baseline of what's required to make this truly work and secure and validated?
So for you to be certain that the person coming in, you need to have pre-validated their identity. So either an app needs to have taken your picture and you upload your driver's license or other recognized government-issued identity document, and then it does a facial comparison between the person uploading and, you know, the government approved identity document, and then it goes off to the vaccine database and collects the vaccine record for the person with that identity, i.e. the same date of birth, same name, and maybe you've had to provide like an email address or a mobile number that you did when you had your vaccination, so that it picks up the correct record. And then it marries the two together and holds them in some way in the app. Now, the app should only hold the information it absolutely requires, and that is your name, your date of birth, and that your vaccine is valid. And I say that because of course, we will come to a point where, like the flu jab, where you need to have another vaccine. So vaccines don't last forever. So at that point, you will, you know, it needs to know that you're within the whatever period of time it is that health organizations decide that they're valid for. And then it will create a QR code that's readable by a kiosk or a scanner. Mm-hmm. So that actually your data is not being shared, but somebody, as you go, you know, as you look at a kiosk, that it's reading the QR code, it knows you have a valid vaccine. And if it's, for example, the company Clear, have you seen those at airports, Dave?
What's an airport?
Yes, yeah. I have actually been to one recently. But it was like walking into a ghost town.
Yeah,
a few months back. But yeah, those terminals there's a company called Clear that run terminals at airport security, and they do facial recognition. So they take your picture, they look at the record that they have on file and match the record to the file. So imagine if you're now turning up to a concert, you go up to the kiosk, you show it your QR code, it knows you've got a vaccine, and it's checking you are the person that was on the identity document that was uploaded at the time you registered with the kiosk manufacturer.
Right. This sounds very complicated.
And that is a fair assumption from an explanation.
I thought you were going to say understatement.
Yeah, maybe it is an understatement, actually. And from the point of explanation, it is. But now think about this from let's flip this and look at this from the consumer side. Yeah, I'm at home. I've got my vaccination record, whatever that may look like, whether it's an email, whether it's a piece of paper, a card, or whatever. But my government has decided that they do have a method of having digital vaccine records. Mm-hmm. So I use my mobile device and I log on to download the app. I validate that I'm the person. Here in California, for me to get my digital vaccine record, where I'm based, I tell it my phone number and I tell it the email address I used at the time I had my vaccination. It downloads the QR code, puts it in the app, and then if it's going that extra step, which it doesn't, by the way, in California, which is a flaw in the entire process here, if it goes
there's not a lot of tech companies there, so you know, it's not much chance of it happening.
You're reading my sarcasm thoughts that are going through my mind, yeah. But if you read, if it went the extra step and then asked me to verify my identity, all I'd be doing is taking a picture of my driver's license, looking into the camera on the phone, and it takes that comparison, links my identity to the vaccine record. Now, when you go to the concert, you walk up to the kiosk, you look in the camera, you show it the QR code, the kiosk gives a green light, and off you go. So actually, once you've registered, it should be a simplified process.
If all those records are in place, right, and they're exportable,
or yeah,
you can do something with them.
And that's a good point, because now imagine, and this is where I think there needs to be a big piece of standardization. So you've got Clear in the US who do airport-style terminals creating a system. You've got Excelsior in New York creating a system. So now all these different companies will require access to government or state-based databases. Now, whether that's in
what
Canada,
could go wrong?
Yeah, whether that's in Canada, whether that's in Europe, whether that's in the US, you know, wherever it is, you're going to have the same issue. So there needs to be some standardization on the mechanism that the terminals use to go and gather the vaccine. But also, you know, to a certain degree, I think I would feel more comfortable if, like in Europe, they kind of put their stake in the ground and turn and say, well, we've partnered with this kiosk manufacturer and we're going to make sure this is ultra secure and work with one vendor. Mm-hmm. Because that would give me a lot more of a warm feeling that when I walk up to this terminal, you know, there's not 15 different commercial companies that all have different privacy policies, that all have, you know, different security systems, all accessing vaccination records. It sounds a bit of a mess.
Yeah, and what is the risk to a private citizen of all this?
Well, that's a very interesting point, because there's another argument of there's an anti-vaccine passport discussion as well. Mm-hmm. Goes along the side of every other anti there is. As you know, there's always a cohort, isn't there, of people in everything that decide that they're against things. Now, the anti-vaccine passport argument is that it's breaching your privacy because you're disclosing the fact you are vaccinated. Now, I'm just going to throw in a consideration here that to go to school in Ontario, you have to have a number of vaccines.
Yeah, you got measles, diphtheria.
So there's 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, number of vaccines. So therefore, if you stand on the street and watch kids that go to school, they're already disclosing that they've had 5 vaccines or however many it is. So if that's an infringement of somebody's privacy, then surely these kids are having their privacy infringed by going to school. Right, so let's dismiss this infringement of privacy rights, because I think that's a red herring. I think that's just somebody doesn't want to have a digital vaccine record. I think the privacy infringement is somewhat negated once you look at it with school children in mind. And in fact, I'm a green card holder in the US, and the same goes for green card holders, by the way. You have to have had 5 vaccinations to be issued a green card. And my arm was very sore the afternoon I had all 5 because the health authorities in Europe couldn't confirm that I'd had them historically, because it was pre-digitalization.
Right.
Yeah, it was a very sore afternoon. but now we've got that piece out the way. Your date of birth is public, is pretty much everywhere public record, and your name is public record. So if the vaccine passport is holding the fact you've had a vaccine, your date of birth, and your name, it doesn't appear to me that it's holding too much data. However, if you then get into when the vaccination was and what type of vaccine was used, and you start including other pieces of information, then that's a good question. Now, the only reason I can understand, if you and I were going to a concert in Toronto, then I understand the venue wants to know my identity and it wants to know that I've been vaccinated. Do they care what I was vaccinated with? No. Do they care when it was applied? No. All they want to know is that it's in date.
Right.
That it hasn't expired, which in theory, the vaccine passport is going to do, because I've had to register. So therefore, my QR code or barcode or whatever it decides to display would be invalid if I'm past the expiration date. Now, that's a minimum amount of data. In theory, that to me is an acceptable risk, because my date of birth and name are already in the public domain. And yes, there is a link to that vaccine record. As long as the kiosk vendor or the app provider is not monitoring my location, and it's not holding any information on me without good reason. So I can understand you might have some for contact tracing reasons for a period of time. And as long as that data is held only for those purposes and deleted when the contact tracing period expires, then it may collect like a hash to identify me, but it doesn't actually have to identify me. It only has to identify my device, in the same way contact tracing systems work. Yeah, I actually think this could be built very, very securely.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I'm up in Canada, so we've got universal health care, and everybody who lives in Canada who's a citizen or approved resident has a health card with a health number. So that's how you, up here, at least where I live, you registered for your vaccination and so on. But in the U.S., which is, you know, 10x the size, you've got 50 states and you've got HMOs and everything else, and they all, I'm guessing, do things a little or a lot differently. How much of a job would it be to figure out something that would work across state lines?
Well, firstly, let's congratulate Canada for having a centralized system. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because although people may look at it and go, well, you know,
it's socialism.
Yeah. Well, it is and it's not. I actually believe every
well, so what?
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually believe every human is entitled. It's a human right to have healthcare.
Yeah.
But that's a very non-American viewpoint. But yeah, I come from Europe where that's normal, is pretty much normal as well. But so in the US, you have one card that was issued by all states. So the CDC vaccination record is the same in every state. The unfortunate part about it is it really is a piece of card.
Okay.
And when I'm going to use myself as the example, because I have no reason not to share. When I went for my vaccination, you know, there was a big long line of people, and the healthcare provider in the small rural town where I live was desperately trying to vaccinate lots of agriculture workers. So, you know, there was a lot of pressure on them to get people through the door quickly. She handed me my card. It had my the vaccination on it used and nothing else. She said, you can fill in the rest of the details yourself.
Oh, geez.
Like my name and my date of birth and the other pieces of information. So already there's flaw number one.
So there's no traceability on the fact that you even had the vaccine other than you saying, I've got this piece of paper.
Well, I'd already registered to have the vaccine.
Oh, okay.
They already had like a driver's license number. So there is a state record.
Okay.
But the card I'm holding, I could have put anybody's name on it. And because it's just a piece of paper, unfortunately, you found outside sporting events that have been held, people selling fake cards because they're very easy to replicate. Yeah. I actually reckon I could probably create one in 5 minutes on a bit of Photoshop and a bit of paper card in the printer, and I'd be away with it. Of course, I think people shouldn't do this because it's got
that serious might not be good for a chief security evangelist to do
no,
that.
No, another exactly hobby. Sorry, and I'm just making that point. I wouldn't do that, and it's wrong for anybody else to do that because actually you may be risking somebody else's health.
Yeah.
In doing so, but you've also seen examples of some doctor surgeries selling the cards without giving the vaccine. So. Whereas in Canada you've got this record and you know, this national, let's call it a Canadian health number, whatever it may be called, the Canadian health number gives you that centralized database. So you're in a much better spot, I think, for actually knowing whether somebody's had a vaccine or not. Now, sure, are there going to be some mistakes in systems, and your media might find two or three people in the entire country whose vaccine wasn't recorded correctly, or it states they didn't have one, and they did have one, and they've got proof they have one. Yeah, there'll always be the odd mistake.
Right. So recognizing that a lot of this verification process as it evolves will be on handheld readers. If it is a kiosk, which is kind of part of my world in digital signage, is there a business opportunity? Is this a high growth potential area, or is this something that's being talked up a lot, but probably won't happen because of all we just talked about is too complicated?
No, I think this is something that is happening. One thing that kind of grates on me slightly, Dave, is that industry seems to be reacting, not being proactive in some of these. So the pandemic hit, and then countries realized they didn't have centralized medical data, and then they realized they'd need, you know, contact tracing type technology. So I understand the pressure on the early parts of the pandemic were to create technologies that nobody had ever considered. Yeah, so that is understood. But at the same time, I think you were always going to need technology to come out of the other end of this pandemic, of knowing who's vaccinated and where they were vaccinated, and whether it's valid for the country you're in. And I say that because there are different approvals on different vaccines in different countries, and they don't recognize some. you know, I'm amazed that actually we're at the hopefully latter end of this pandemic with, you know, this wave of Delta variant that's going around. Hopefully this puts a stake in the ground and we're going to come out of this particular variant in a much better shape. But you're going to, for at least a year to 18 months, with different variants knocking around and most of the world still not vaccinated,
yep,
and people traveling, then you're going to need some sort of kiosk or scanner to verify people's vaccinations in that way. So this is an industry. Why wasn't this being built this time last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why we knew we were going to need it. So why are companies only building it now? But that's my gripe as a technologist.
So if I am a kiosk hardware manufacturer, will the ask be for just a QR code reader, or are you going to need a camera that's going to do facial recognition, or will the QR code be enough because that was part of what got you to a QR code?
It depends on the scenario where I think you're scanning the person. So if you're at a stadium, I think you're going to need a kiosk that has the camera, because you know, you've got maybe 10,000 people coming through a gate. You know, maybe you've got 10 gates, 1,000 people coming through each one, mm-hmm. and you want to process them quickly. So maybe 15, 20 seconds, they're going to look at the camera, they're going to scan their QR code, it's going to do a quick match on their identity. Yes, that's the person, allow them in, green, off they go. So in that scenario, I think you need a camera. However, when you and I go to our favorite restaurant and the restaurateur turns around and says only vaccinated people can come into this restaurant and eat, you know, he's going to have probably a mobile app with the person on the door, and that mobile app is going to scan your QR code and know it's valid. Now, for them to actually know that the QR code belongs to you, they're also going to need to ask to see your driver's license and look at the name and date of birth on the driver's license and make sure it matches the QR code. So I think there's actually a place for different systems in different environments because of the throughput. In a restaurant where you've maybe got 100 people coming through a night, it's fairly easy to do that identity check as well.
Yeah, but different for a football stadium that has 90,000 seats if they go back to full capacity.
You mean they're not at full capacity in Canada?
Not where I live, at least. I don't think so.
So you didn't get my British sarcasm in there,
yeah,
that day, because I actually think they shouldn't be at full capacity here in the US.
I've been to a couple of soccer matches up here, but they were at two-thirds capacity. But I live in a part of the world where I'm blessed that we barely got COVID.
Well, and you know, I think there's two things there, isn't there? There's one of you as the spectator needs to feel comfortable, and I think that mm-hmm. extra piece of space makes you feel comfortable. So it's not always about the, you know, opening up fully, but yes.
So if I'm looking at doing this, hardware manufacturer is one thing. You can build it, and as long as you've got the ability to drop, you know, a different kind of PC on there, whatever horsepower needs to happen, you can do this. If you're a digital signage software company or a kiosk software company, is this something you should even look at, or is it it's just too complicated right now? And there are companies much larger and broader that are already light years ahead, like a Clear.
Well, I think there are companies that are light years ahead because they already had this, what I define as the security element of creating such a kiosk. Because right. Bear in mind, it is taking somebody's picture. It is validating against a vaccination database. You need to make sure all these things are done in a very secure fashion. If you were a kiosk manufacturer that, I can't think of a, maybe you created tourist attraction kiosks that, you know, provide information on tourist attractions. Mm-hmm. If you're in that game and you're now looking at this, I think to do this securely would be a massive challenge. And I think you'd be 6 to 9 months behind people that already have this technology. And it would be very difficult for you to do it. Or you'd end up putting something in market that might have vulnerabilities that somebody will exploit. And believe me, they will exploit them if they're there. And then you'll just get a bad rap. So actually, I think unless you're already in the identity verification space or in that medical environment, I think it would be a big challenge.
Yeah, so when I last time I was almost the last time I was traveling, period, going out of Amsterdam's airport, they had a passport verification with a camera and a camera that would kind of slide down to be level with your face, and you would scan your passport there on the whole nine yards. So they had a whole orchestrated high throughput kind of system together. So that's the kind of company that would be, you know, would have a leg up on the others, right?
Yeah, and when I come back into the US, yeah, I had, well, when I, if I can remember what it was like,
yeah,
because I haven't traveled like you probably for yeah,
18 months,
is, yeah. When I come back in, I use a terminal to put my US identity documents, my green card details. It scans them. It takes a picture. It compares the picture, and yeah, the company that's created those terminals for TSA. Yeah, they're in a good spot to be able to do something similar for a vaccine record.
Is there, I suppose the other worry that I would have if I was a vendor looking at this is going to be held up in court. No matter what you develop, there's going to be the anti-vax crowd and the privacy, you know, crowd there. The people who worry about things like computer vision and so on, they're all going to file lawsuits and drag this whole thing down into the courts for, you know, I don't know, months or years even. Is that realistic, or you don't think that'll happen?
Well, I think that's more of a governmental issue, isn't it? The anti-vaxxers are likely to turn and say that governments or states shouldn't be doing this type of activity. Mm-hmm. As a provider of the technology, you're not the one deploying the technology. You're only the one providing it. It's the person who deploys it that I think could be dragged into the court for actually requiring it.
Right, but you're manufacturing these things on somewhat on spec, or at least getting ready to spin this up, and then you are sitting on inventory that you can't do anything with because it's all held up in courts.
Yes, I agree. And you know, how long will these terminals actually be required for? You know, maybe 1-2 years. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think we return to full normality at some stage. And maybe that's the long game. Maybe it's even 3 years. But by the time you've created this technology, you've got it to market, I think you're going to be on the back end of that marketplace. I think, right, you know, all those stadiums and such like that needed it will already have it.
Maybe they, I'm sure somebody's thinking about this as well, that, two years out, they can convert these things into payment terminals for concessions and so on.
Well, there's a thought, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sure they could be reused. Maybe they could be turned into voting kiosks.
that's an entirely different discussion, isn't it?
It is, and I'm not going. We shouldn't go there today.
All right, Tony, I appreciate you taking the time with me. That was very interesting.
Oh, my pleasure, Dave. Anytime.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.